Welcome back to Vikings Are Gay, the podcast that lifts the lid on the Vikings you think you know and reveals just how queer they are. I'm Amy Jefford-Franks, and what an episode I have in store for you today. Trying to identify queerness in a distant historical culture isn't easy. The Vikings didn't have the range of language for queerness we do today. The acronym LGBTQ has only come into being in the last 50 years or so, following the Stonewall riots and the rise of the modern queer rights movement. But the existence of queer people isn't new. In order to see them, we have to delve into the mindset and language of the Vikings to uncover stories of queerness. Today, we're going to look at two words from Old Icelandic, erki and seyður. They mean very different things, but it's hard to discuss one without the other. Erki is a noun, with argr and ragr being adjective forms. It was used to mean a range of things, including sorcery, cowardice, male homosexuality, female lust, and women more broadly. Unmanliness seems to be the central element of the meaning of the word. Men accused of being erki are essentially accused of being in some way effeminate. This was a very shameful and serious thing to be accused of. If someone was accused of being erki, the law said that they could challenge their accuser to a duel called a holmgang, and if the accuser refused to take part in the holmgang, they would be outlawed. In fact, the Icelandic law book, known as Graugaus or Grey Goose, says, "There are three words should exchanges between people ever reach such dire limits which have full outlawry as the penalty, if a man calls another ragr, stróðinn, or sörðinn. They are to be prosecuted like any other insulting word, and, what is more, a man has a right to kill in retaliation for these words." There is an underlying implication here, though, that makes this word very useful for us. When men are accused of being erki, they often are essentially being accused of passive male homosexuality, or, you know, just being a bottom. Erki is the closest word we have from within Viking culture to identify queerness. Seyður is a noun that refers to some kind of ritualized practice in Old Norse religion, often thought of as magic. Seyður is reported in a range of sources, but little is known about what it looks like. One key thing we do know is that the practitioners of Seyður were almost always women, and they were referred to as völva or völur in the plural. Seyður is mentioned in relation to the gods, making its religious link clear. In Ynglingasaga, a story that places the mythical gods as the early powers in Norway and discusses the factions of these gods, the Æsir and the Vanir, it says, "Dóttir njarðar var Freyja, hon var blótgyðja, og hon kendi fyrst með ásum seyð, sem vörnum var týtt." Or, in something we might understand a little better, "Njörður's daughter was Freyja. She was a sacrificial priestess. She was the first to teach the Æsir seyður, which was customary among the Vanir." But that still doesn't tell us much about what Seyður actually was. The most in-depth description of Seyður appears in Erik's Saga Rauða, or the Saga of Erik the Red, when we meet Thorbjörg Litlavölva. The tale goes a little something like this. This was a very lean time in Greenland. Those who had gone hunting had poor catches, and some of them had failed to return. In the district, there lived a woman called Thorbjörg, a seeress who was called the Little Prophetess. She was one of 10 sisters, all of whom had the gift of prophecy, and she was the only one of them still alive. It was Thorbjörg's custom to spend the winter visiting, one after another, farms to which she had been invited, mostly by people curious to learn of their own future or what was in store for the coming year. Since Thorkell was the leading farmer there, people felt it was up to him to try and find out when the hard times which had been oppressing them would let up. Thorkell invited the seeress to visit, and preparations were made to entertain her well, as was the custom of the time when a woman of this type visited. A high seat was set for her, complete with cushion. This was to be stuffed with chicken feathers. When she arrived one evening, along with the man who'd been sent to fetch her, she was wearing a black mantle with a strap, which was adorned with precious stones right down to the hem. Around her neck, she wore a string of glass beads, and on her head, a hood of black lambskin lined with white catskin. She bore a staff with a knob at the top, adorned with brass set with stones on top. About her waist, she had a linked charm belt with a large purse. In it, she kept charms which she needed for her predictions. She wore calfskin boots lined with fur, with long, sturdy laces and large pewter knobs on the end. On her hands, she wore gloves of catskin, white and lined with fur. When she entered, everyone was supposed to offer her respectful greetings, and she responded according to how the person appealed to her. Farmer Thorkell took the wise woman by the hand and led her to the seat which had been prepared for her. He then asked her to survey his flock, servants, and buildings. She had little to say about all of it. That evening, tables were set up for food prepared for the seeress. A porridge of kid's milk was made for her, and as meat she was given the hearts of all the animals available there. She had a spoon of brass and a knife with an ivory shaft, its two halves clasped with bronze bands, and the point of which had broken off. Once the table had been cleared away, Thorkell approached Thorbjörg and asked her what she thought of the house there and the conduct of the household, and how soon he should expect an answer to what he had asked and everyone wished to know. She answered that she would not reveal this until the next day after having spent the night there. Late the following day, she was provided with things she required to carry out her magic rites. She asked for a woman who knew the chants required for carrying out the magic rites, which were called ward songs. But such women were not to be found. Then the people of the household were asked if anyone was there with such knowledge. Gudrid answered, "I have neither magical powers nor the gift of prophecy, but in Iceland, my foster mother Halldís taught me chants she called ward songs." Thorbjörg answered, "Then you know more than I expected." Gudrid said, "These are the sort of actions in which I intend to take no part because I am a Christian woman." Thorbjörg answered, "It could be that you could help the people here by doing so, and you'd be no worse a woman for that. But I expect Thorkell to provide me with what I need." Thorkell then urged Gudrid, who said she would do as he wished. The women formed a warding ring around the platform raised for sorcery, with Thorbjörg perched atop it. Gudrid spoke the chant so well and so beautifully that people said that they had never heard anyone recite it in such a fair voice. The seeress thanked her for her chant. She said many spirits had been attracted who thought the chant fair to hear. "Though they wished earlier to turn their backs on us and refused to do our bidding, many things are now clear to me which were earlier concealed from both me and others. And I can tell you that this spell of hardship will last no longer, and times will improve as the spring advances. The bout of illness which has long plagued you will also improve sooner than you expect. And you, Gudrid, I will reward on the spot for the help we have received, since your fate is now very clear to me. You will make the most honourable of matches here in Greenland, though you won't be putting down any roots here, as your path leads to Iceland, and from you will be descended a long and worthy line. Over all the branches of the family a ray will shine. May you fare well now, my child." From this tale, we learn a few important things about Seidr. Women chanting was essential to the ritual, making it in some way communal. The Völva sat on a platform in a raised position, and the Völva communicated with spirits and could see the future. We have archaeological evidence that appears to link to Seidr and Völur too. Archaeologists find staffs that have no obvious function in daily life that they call staffs of sorcery. These are iron rods, normally 2 to 3 feet long, and have a cage-like element at one end. Importantly, they are almost always found in the graves of women. Alongside this, we often also find mind-altering substances in these graves. We find drugs. Most often, this is cannabis, but it is also sometimes henbane, which causes hallucinations and can also be an aphrodisiac. More on that soon. It seems altering the state of consciousness and reality was important here. Maybe it helped the Völuspá connect with the other worlds. One particularly fascinating grave we have that appears to belong to a Völuspá is in the Ring Fortress in Jutland, the main peninsula of Denmark, called Firkat. This ring fortress seems to date from around 980. The earthwork walls were around 4 meters high and were surrounded by a ditch that went down 2 meters below that, and the diameter of the fortress was around 120 meters. I visited a few years ago, and these numbers don't really do it justice. It feels huge and so impressive. When archaeologists excavated the site, they found a grave that is of particular interest to us. The grave of a woman was found, dressed in royal colours of blue and red, with gold thread worked through it. She was buried with a horse and carriage, which was saved only for the richest people. She was buried with a whole range of beautiful, rich and rare objects. These objects include a strange metal rod, seemingly a staff of sorcery, and henbane seeds, a hallucinogenic and aphrodisiac. She seemed to have a small but richly decorated box, which had some animal bones in it. She is considered to be a Völuspá based on these combined elements. But Seiðr wasn't always practiced by women, which is where shit really gets interesting. In the saga about Harald Fairhair, we learn about Eirik Bloodaxe, the son of Harald Fairhair, who is planning to be king of Norway instead of any of his brothers. One of Eirik's brothers was called Rúnvaldur Réttolbeini, and he had power over Hadaland. They found out that Rúnvaldur had been learning Seiðr there, so, on Harald's orders, Eirik went to Hadaland and burned his brother Rúnvaldur in his house, alongside 80 other Seiðr practitioners. These other Seiðr practitioners are referred to as Seiðmen in the Icelandic text. The use of the word men here is the same as modern English and implies that these Seiðr practitioners were all men. The word ergi isn't used here explicitly, so we can't say for sure that this is why Rúnvaldur and the 80 other men were murdered, but this is an extreme situation. The text says that Harald thinks ill of Seiðmen, not Völuspá, the women who practice Seiðr. Being a man practicing Seiðr was a bad enough thing that his brother and father agreed that this man, their brother, their son, had to be killed alongside his 80 nameless companions. These men weren't alone in practicing Seiðr. In next week's episode, we're going to explore Odin in lots of depth. But for now, we just got to know that not only did he practice Seiðr a lot, but he was the god of it, and I think that says a lot. And, most importantly, he was consistently accused of being ergi as a result. The nature of Seiðr as a practice has been hotly debated in its relation to shamanism. We don't know if Viking religion itself was shamanistic in nature, but the nature of Seiðr does seem to have some parallels. Practitioners aim to reach an altered state of consciousness. According to various accounts, there seems to be the inclusion of drumming and chanting, and there is an element of healing and prophecy. One suggestion is that the practice of Seiðr may have been borrowed from the Sami people in northern Scandinavia. The Sami people are indigenous nomadic peoples with cultural links to the circumpolar peoples, such as the First Nations of Canada. These cultures are known to include shamanism in their practices. Often this shamanism has links to the ideas of third genders or queer genders. This is particularly interesting in the light of what we learned about Seiðr. There seems to be a breaking of gendered norms and boundaries here that makes the Seiðr practitioner something else. There are a number of suggestions that there was a sexual element to Seiðr. One of these comes from Britt Solly, who speculates about a number of different reasons that Seiðr is considered ergi. One of these picks on this sexual link. She notes Odin's self-sacrifice by hanging himself in the world tree, Yggdrasil, which she suggests may be a shamanistic initiation ritual, as it involved ecstasy and pain, allowing him to reach a trance-like state. She highlights modern research surrounding autoerotic asphyxiation and how important near suffocation at the same time as someone reaches orgasm is. She considers this practice to be queer in and of itself. She further considers the descriptions of hanged men around temples in the Viking Age as possible evidence for men who failed these initiation rituals. So here's a fun little story time relating to this. I first came across this idea about 2 years ago when I was working on my master's thesis, and I found it pretty nuts. So I wrote my whole master's thesis on Odin, who is referred to as the Allfather in some Viking sources. So I discussed this in a chapter of my thesis before going on to talk about this strange idea. One evening, I was sat in a cafe in downtown Reykjavik with my friends, laughing at how strange this chapter had become. My friend turned to me and with a completely straight face said, "You have to call your chapter Choke Me All Daddy." I laughed so hard that the mouthful of red wine I had was sprayed all over them, our other friend, the table, and the lamp hanging above us. So if you're ever at the Old Harbour in Reykjavik, head to Rust. See if the wine is still on that hanging lamp right in front of the door. What's also really interesting to note here is the crossover between sexuality and gender. In queerness today, sexuality and gender are very distinct, unrelated things. Cisgender queer people exist, and straight trans people exist. But this nuance didn't exist so clearly in the past. Men who practice seidr in the Viking Age appear to be showing both queer sexualities and queer genders in the same moment and the same action. These were inextricably linked in a way that we don't relate to today. Of course, there is the complex of homophobia and misogyny seemingly playing into this. These men were deemed effeminate and bad men because they were seemingly perceived as acting as passive parties in queer sex. Basically, the Vikings were bottom shamers, let's face it. Locating queerness in the past is a challenging task. Locating it in a time period when people didn't write things down is even harder. I've given you a little insight into how complicated this world is. Ergi and seidr are some of the key ways we can identify this. It's certainly not the only way. Later episodes will show us a whole range of other ways to see Viking Age queerness. But if you want to talk about Viking Age queerness, you have to know about this topic first. It's a fascinating way to look into another culture's mindset around queerness and remind ourselves that our experiences are not a monolith, but ever-changing, growing, and evolving. How we act, how we speak, how we identify queerness will always change. Next week on Vikings Are Gay, we'll be exploring Odin, the top dog, or top god, of Norse mythology. We'll be looking at how he practiced seidr and was accused of being ergi, and how that affects his gender in the mythological and archaeological sources. Thank you for listening to this episode of Vikings Are Gay. Find Vikings Are Gay on Twitter and Facebook. And if you have any questions about the Vikings, tweet them using the hashtag VikingsAreQ&A, and I'll be answering all your burning questions at the end of the series. I've been Amy Jefford-Franks, and you've made it to the end of this podcast, and I can't wait to tell you more. Be sure to tell your friends that the Vikings are gay.